Good evening. First, I want to thank each and every one of you for coming out in this quite the rainy evening. So we definitely appreciate that, and we hope that we'll make it worth your while this evening. As Ira said, my name is Debbie Adams, and I'm from American House. And first, I want to thank Ira for allowing us to come to speak tonight. Really, we've met Ira through many expos that most of us have been at. And being at the expos and having that interaction with seniors, lots of times they came with lots of questions. And so we as a group decided that maybe we could help with some of those questions, because sometimes everyone feels so lost because there is so much in all the maze of senior care and senior housing. And so that's kind of our goal tonight, is to kind of help untangle some of that for you. So just to kind of let you know how we're going to proceed, each one of us will speak on a different topic. Beth is from Story Point, and she is going to be speaking on assisted living and memory care. And then Courtney is next, and she's from Heartland, and she's going to be speaking about rehab. And there's lots of questions about rehab and Medicare and all of that, so she'll be speaking to that. We have Beth next, and she's from Arbor Hospice, and she's going to be speaking on palliative care and hospice care. And then we have Kyra at the end, and she's from Legacy Law, and she's going to be talking about many of the legal issues that so often a company that seniors need to have in place. I'm going to speak tonight. I'm going to start off a little bit about independent living. So for either if you're the senior themselves looking for housing, or if you're the senior looking for housing. So there's many questions that come with that. When is it time to look for housing? What kind of housing do I need? How do I pay for it? What are my needs? So when you start to begin to look at housing, those are the kind of questions that you want to begin with. And so first I want to explain to you a little bit of an overview of the continuum of care of senior living. So you would normally start out with independent living, which many of you may be aware of. It's an apartment building, a bigger home or something, and everyone in that building is 55 and older, 65 and older, and they have an apartment. There's most likely not additional services that are offered. Everyone in that community is just older. The next step to that would be similar to what American House is, and American House is of course not the only one, but that's called independent, and yet it does have some assistance available. But basically everyone in the community is independent. So when I say independent, that means that they're still pretty mobile. We have people that are going on vacations into Florida, and they just don't want to be in their own homes for whatever particular reason. And it accompanies with some services such as meals and laundry and housekeeping. So that active senior just doesn't want to do many of those tasks that are related to having their own home. But accompanied in that is oftentimes assistance. So that as health changes, they'll have care providers in there that can maybe help with dressing, bathing, medication. So those are you have independent. The next step would be like independent with assistance. The next step would be an assisted living. So everyone in that community requires assistance of some sort or another. Either they need help with dressing every morning, they need help with bathing, their health condition is such that they need help with that. The next step to that then would be that you would require additional care would be a nursing home. So there is a continuum of care, and trying to see where you fit in that continuum of care just comes from gaining knowledge through talking with your doctor, kind of just reviewing yourself or your family member to see where their care needs are at. And then just kind of taking it there. There's lots of professionals out there that can help you. I also have at the back table a wonderful guide, actually, that I did copy. It's called Assisted Living Communities, but it is helps you address the many questions about finding senior housing, what to look for, the different types, the many questions to ask. They talk about the physical features of the building, is the community well designed, what talks about floor plans, talks about assessment costs, how do you pay for some of this housing is answered in here as well. It talks about medication. So this is a very helpful guide. I encourage you to pick one of these up. So that's a brief overview of independent living. And so Beth is now going to speak a little bit more to assisted living and memory care. Beth?
Thank you, Debbie. Hi, I'm Beth Conway, and I'm the community specialist at the new Story Point that is currently being built in Saline. I'm going to talk about assisted living. So like Debbie said, sometimes when you need a little extra help, whether it comes from a doctor or if you end up in a rehab facility and you just need to have more help and can't go home because your house isn't set up for the proper continuing of care that you would need. Or if you just feel that you need more help. If you feel that you've been falling a lot of times seniors will have falls, and they're just off and they don't realize why. So what we talk about is if you need more help with your ADLs, which is your activities of daily life, is what we call them. That would be your medication management, your bathing or dressing, your cooking, you know, three meals a day, doing all your housekeeping, helping you make your bed, and activities, because activities are really important as well. A lot of times seniors will sit in their home and they do become bored and lonely, and that too, when you get into a community, especially assisted living, they are constantly doing activities and fitness programs because the mind is just as important as the body. So they want to keep you active in all ways. And so that is really assisted living. And it's such a well-rounded, not just to help you with your activities of daily life, it's for your body and soul, your whole mind, body, and soul. When you need a little bit more help, or if you start to see yourself becoming even more forgetful, or if you see a loved one, you know, I always use the example of if you lose your keys and you're like, oh gosh, I lost my keys again. You know, that's normal. I lose my keys. That's just a normal progression. But if you can't find your keys and you find them in the refrigerator and the milk's in the cupboard, if you see your loved one going through this and having some different things that are out of the ordinary, that's probably a dementia, Alzheimer's beginning stage. And you know, it's very important to look for that. I always use a guide when loved ones are home during the holiday and they'll go over to a parent's home and they see, you know, mom was always really clean her house was in shambles, or, you know, just, you know, you want to be, just look for things out of the ordinary. Or if they get lost, I mean, that's a big thing, and we call that a flight risk. So even if they're living in an assisted living or even a independent living, you know, you can come and go as you please. But if you go for that walk and you can't find your way back, I mean, that's when you really have to look at maybe a memory care community would be appropriate for your loved one. In a memory care community, they have so many things to offer. They'll have dementia care specialists that will know all the different stages, and again, triggering the mind, triggering different things to help you remember, help you have your dignity and continue your life as independent as possible. But in a memory care, normally we are helping with all your ADLs, all your activities of daily life, from bathing, toileting, dressing, escort mobility. A lot of times they'll have it where you need even help feeding yourself because you just forget. The mind is in the progression of the disease, that is what happens with that. So that's when you really have to look at what's needed, if it's assisted living or memory care. Also, most assisted living and memory care are licensed communities, and they do offer, if you have long-term care insurance, they will cover that. So that's a nice thing if you've planned, or if your loved one has planned and it has that type of insurance, it is covered in a licensed assisted living and memory care community. That is about what I have to say about assisted living and memory care. We'll take some questions and answers at the end after we all speak. So now I'm going to call up Courtney Haynes, and she's going to talk from Heartland Rehab.
Thank you, Beth. So my name is Courtney, and I'm the marketing director for Heartland Healthcare in Ann Arbor. So for those of you that are not familiar with what a skilled rehabilitation center is, so really by definition, it's a type of nursing home that's recognized by the Medicare and Medicaid systems as meeting healthcare needs for individuals who have a potential function need to have some therapy, and then basically for a limited period of time, and then they'll transition back home. So a skilled nursing center or skilled nursing facility provides 24-hour nursing care and rehabilitation services, such as physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. Also, recreational therapy is incorporated to their care plan as well. So each patient, when they come into a skilled nursing facility, receives a comprehensive care plan based on their specific diagnosis. Every patient rehabs differently. Every patient goes into the hospital for a different diagnosis. So not everyone rehabs the same way. So you're going to meet with a therapy team, and again, they'll customize a program that's specific to your diagnosis. So a couple reasons on why you might require skilled rehab services. One, maybe let's say your physician recommends that you have some therapy services, maybe after having an elective surgery. Maybe you go in for a knee replacement or a hip replacement. Most likely your surgeon will recommend that before transitioning back home. Another reason that you might require some therapy is, let's say you unexpectedly end up in the hospital. You're a little weak, and maybe you live alone, or you don't have someone that's able to stay with you throughout the entire day. Your physician or surgeon might recommend, again, that you come and have some therapy, get a little bit stronger, and then that way you would transition back home afterwards. So again, let's say you happen to need rehab services. There's a couple different ways on how you can go about paying for a rehabilitation center. So for those of you that have Medicare as your primary care insurance, how it would work is this. So in order to qualify or to utilize your Medicare benefits in a skilled rehab setting, you would have to have a 3-night hospital stay, and it has to be 3 consecutive nights. The hospital has to basically deem you as inpatient status, so you wouldn't be able to be in observation. So you technically have to be inpatient, staying overnight. Once you have your 3 consecutive nights, then you'd have a social worker at the hospital that would be working with you. You are allowed to have choices. There are so many different rehabilitation centers in the area. They'll make some recommendations to you, and then we kind of go from there. Once you have that 3-night hospital stay, you would transition to a center, and then you'd begin your therapy regimen from there. The first 100, well, technically, you're entitled up to 100 days of Medicare services, the first 20 days being covered 100%. Then day 21 through day 100, there is a copay at any center that you go to. It's a Medicare copay, and that's $157.50 a day. Now, for those of you that have a secondary insurance, we actually can apply those copay days to your secondary insurance to see what percentage that they would be willing to cover for you. One thing I recommend, and you know, let families know or patients know, there is always an 800 number on the back of your insurance cards. So even if you're going in for an elective surgery, I always suggest that you call that 800 number. Let them know that hypothetically you're going into the hospital to have surgery, or if you're already in the hospital, if a loved one can call for you, let them know you're looking at rehab services and ask what percentage does my policy cover? Am I expected to pay any out-of-pocket costs? Always kind of a good heads up so that way something doesn't come to you in the mail, you know, after your stay. If you have another insurance provider that is something other than Medicare as your primary care insurance, one great thing about most rehabilitation centers is they will work with your insurance agency before you come into the center. They'll get authorization before you come in. Again, that's kind of where that number comes in, that 800 number that you can utilize and call to see what your out-of-pocket expenses might be. Another thing, so there are so many providers in the area. All great, most all provide wonderful care. One thing I do like to, again, recommend to families is there's a few things that you should look at or consider when choosing a skilled rehabilitation center. One thing I suggest is asking about staffing. Are they following the state of Michigan staffing guidelines? Appearance, what does the building look like? Is it cleanly? Do the patients appear to be well-groomed? The center specifically, is there an odor in the air? You want to be kind of mindful of that. Activities are important. In most rehabilitation centers, there's recreational therapy there. We want to encourage patients to get up and be mobile and participate and socialize with others. You know, we don't really dupe ourselves into believing that anyone wants to be in a rehabilitation center, but you're there to get stronger, and that socialization piece really is important to helping your rehab. Couple last things, you want to ask about their state survey. Did they pass with flying colors? Lastly, the best thing that I can suggest is if you know you're having an elective surgery, to go out and tour rehabilitation centers before you go in for your surgery. It's the best way to kind of see and get a feel for the environment that you might be having rehab in. If you're already in the hospital, we recommend that a family member or a friend goes out and tours for you. That's really it about rehab. And again, like Beth was saying, we'll answer questions at the end, okay? I'm going to pass it over to Beth now with Arbor Hospice.
All right, thank you for coming out today. I want to talk to you about about hospice and about palliative care. I am with Arbor Hospice, but just people sometimes have an idea when they hear that word hospice that means this is the end right now, and they fear it. They fear hearing that word, and I can really understand. Hospice is actually an idea. An idea of when someone has a terminal condition, seriously ill, that their treatment no longer will bring any quality to their life or any benefit, the doctor may say, I think it might be time for hospice. So if you do hear that, what is hospice? What is that idea? That your loved one is provided comfort care, individualized comfort care. So what's important is not that you're at the end of your life, but you have the opportunity to have people supporting you at this time, supporting your family, and providing the care. So hospice is a benefit that Medicare provides. It's 100% covered. There's really no limit on it. So people are afraid, it may not be covered. It's too early. It's really never too early to start that process so you can get to know your care team. So what hospice can provide is services of a nurse, a social worker, spiritual care. We have volunteers who come and can provide companionship, volunteers that bring pet therapy along. We have a couple of dogs, and other hospices do as well. So that can be really uplifting. We've had some patients that have not really been responding to the rest of the team, but you bring the dog in and they're all smiles and wake up. So and enjoy themselves. So it's about the quality of your life. And so hospice it doesn't have to be that scary thing. There's a lot of myths about hospice, that they'll come in and it's like assisted suicide. And that's a myth. We don't do that. We provide the comfort, the availability of the medications to keep pain managed, anxiety, and we work with your doctor on how to do that. Palliative care, you may have heard that word, palliative meaning comfort, and it's often been associated with hospice, but there's a separate program that, again, Medicare will cover, and palliative care can actually be used while you're still getting treatment. And what studies have shown is that when you have palliative care in addition to, let's say someone is going through chemotherapy for a cancer, but they have trouble with pain or nausea, the palliative care team can come on, and what that is a nurse practitioner or doctor can come to your home. They literally will go to your home, do an assessment, a very good comprehensive assessment, and then in consultation with your doctor, determine maybe let's change this medication a little bit and see if we can help with that pain. So that nurse practitioner will come visit you, consult your doctor, and they can come back every month. They can come back more frequently if needed, if there were a lot of changes. So that's a real nice option that Medicare provides. One of the other things the nurse practitioner can do is, let's say you don't have a terminal condition necessarily, but a chronic condition, congestive heart failure with the symptoms of swelling or depression or shortness of breath. It's hard to get out. It's a taxing effort to get out. Again, the nurse can come out and evaluate you. She can also provide, she doesn't have to necessarily have the doctor write those orders. She can do that as well. So we have what's called a consultative and an active treatment. So she can see you, let's try this, and check in with you to see if it's helping. So, and while she's doing that visit, a very important aspect of care and of thinking of how you want your end of life to be or the continuum of your life would be to start discussing advanced care planning. A lot of times people are afraid to start talking about those hard issues. What do I want when it's time for me, when my end is near? How do I want to be treated? Do I want to be resuscitated? Do I want a feeding tube? All of those questions can, be brought up with the nurse practitioner and help you kind of talk through those things and determine what you want so that your loved ones know and you're assured that you get what you need. So there's a lot more about it, but I'll see what you think and answer your questions. Okay.
Good evening. My name's Kyra Sims. I'm an attorney at Legacy Law Center, and we focus our practice on elder law and estate planning. So some of the things that we've been talking about so far today have dealt with sort of the continuum of the aging process. In our practice, we deal with people's estate plans and their wishes. And a lot of people think that an estate plan means what happens to my stuff when I die. And that's definitely a part of an estate plan, but a lot of the things that we provide for our clients or people who come in to see us also have to deal with these different stages as far as assisted living, hospice, things like that. Two examples would be powers of attorney. That's kind of the basis starting point for an estate plan. For one, if you become incapacitated, you may want a financial power of attorney so that you have helpers, whether it's kids, a spouse, loved ones, who would be on your financial power of attorney and would be able to help you do things like pay bills, get access to your funds. If you are incapacitated, you aren't able to leave your house or you don't have access to your financial powers of attorney. If any of you here do already have financial power of attorney, something you may not be aware of is that they were recently updated updated in 2011. And so if you have an old financial power of attorney, your financial institutions may not accept them anymore. So that may be just one reason that you would need to think about updating that piece of your estate plan. Another piece that may be more relevant to what the other ladies on the panel have discussed are healthcare documents. So two pieces that we have as part of our comprehensive estate plans are healthcare powers of attorney, as well as HIPAA authorizations. So again, if you are incapacitated and you aren't able to speak for yourself, it's important that you have a healthcare power of attorney that lists people that you would want and you trust to make healthcare decisions for you in the event that you aren't able to speak for yourself. With privacy laws the way that they are, it's important to have those documents in place before you need them. So that's kind of the basis for our estate plan when we think about documents or tools that we need in our toolbox before we get to the death planning part of estate planning. A piece that a lot of people will want to talk about also in estate planning is wills versus trusts. That's a pretty comprehensive conversation. I'm not going to get too in-depth about that at this point, but the basic overview is that if you have a will or if you have no written plan at all for where you want your assets to go upon your death, they will have to go through the Washtenaw County Probate Court or wherever you are residing at the time of your death. If you have a trust and your trust is funded correctly, then you are able to avoid probate court, and trusts also provide a bit of more control about what happens to your assets upon death. An example of that is that if you have your children listed as beneficiaries of your trust, but you don't want them to receive their inheritance at age 18, you have control over when your beneficiaries receive their inheritance. You have control over your trustees. You have a lot more control over your estate plan in general, as opposed to if you just have a will. But having something in place is always better than having nothing in place, and you want to make sure that your wishes are followed through, and we help clients do that. In addition, we just consider ourselves a resource in the community. We're happy to be up here with all these other ladies providing information. So even if you don't hire us to do anything for an estate plan, if you have an estate plan, if you don't need any of our resources, we're still there to provide direction for resources that you may need as you go through the aging continuum. So I'll answer any questions you guys have during the question and answer, and we also have resources in the back if you're interested in more information about our firm. Thank you.
This is about the estate type thing. If I know with doing the healthcare one?
The healthcare power of attorney or HIPAA?
Yeah, the one where you say what you want. You don't want a feeding tube, but, you know, whatever. Okay, like that one. You can just get a form and fill it out.
Yes.
Is there such a form, or do you need to go to an attorney for the financial power of attorney?
Yes, you do need an attorney for that.
You do need an attorney for that. Okay. Thank you.
Do you have
wishes? Financial power of attorney?
Not financial.
Yeah, the financial.
Financial.
Oh,
I thought you said healthcare. Okay.
Yeah, I was saying you could do that without an attorney. You just... Yeah.
Yes, the healthcare documents, yeah. You may have them already with your doctor. They might have you fill out a HIPAA or something similar to a healthcare power of attorney form when you go to the hospital or just when you go to visit a physician. Financial power of attorney is a totally separate document that's usually provided by an attorney. Some institutions like Wells Fargo, Merrill Lynch, things like that have their own forms, but they also may require additional documentation like a financial power of attorney that we provide.
Okay, thank you.
I have some relatives who are concerned about hospice care because they're not sure what medications and procedures would be covered if they go into hospice care, because I understand that there's pain control and so on, but what about things like glaucoma drops for the eyes, because that's not really considered comfort care?
Right. They can certainly continue their medications, especially like their glaucoma drops. Hospice wouldn't cover it. So yes, hospice would cover any of the medications related to their comfort about their life-limiting condition. So the glaucoma drops would still be covered by their regular insurance.
Okay.
So like they're, let's say they had cancer and they were diabetic. They would still get their diabetes supplies and insulin or whatever they needed.
And as far as medical things, because I understand you don't go to the emergency room anymore, mm-hmm. what happens if they fall and break their hip or their leg?
Well, they can actually, we look at every individual situation. So they can go to the emergency room. But so what we would encourage, there's always a 24-hour line that one would call, and you would be responded to by a nurse and assess kind of over the phone what's needed. So the family member says they fell. I really think they broke their arm. She would say, okay, go ahead and call 911. And then we take it on our side. Probably a follow-up with a social worker would meet you at the emergency room or call ahead and let the emergency room people know that the person that's coming in is hospice. And then, of course, if they are a do not resuscitate, the HVA or ambulance would, you know, want that documentation. So we always instruct our families to have that available and to do that. But they can certainly go to the emergency room. And not even just for a fall. And it becomes kind of a payer source question. And that's why we like to be involved at first, because you know, let's say somebody without calling hospice goes to the emergency room. So they are on hospice because of a lung disease, and they go to the hospital emergency room because they're having trouble breathing. So then we have to get in there and work with the doctors and sort of determine, you know, could this have been done at home, you know, et cetera. So, and work that out. But it's individual. I've sent people to the emergency room because of all kinds of things. A sore toe that we couldn't heal or whatever. So,
two parts to this question. The Medicare taking care of your living hospice, whatever, pays 100%, and you said 21 days, et cetera. So parts of it are not paid for. So this is the estate part of this. So if you run out of money, say you're in extended, like my dad was, in extended care, and he eventually died and it was a lot of money. And then they wanted the house and they wanted this and they wanted that and there was no estate plan. Is there a way to protect that when my turn comes? If I run out of money for all of this and my estate plan is in place, can it be planned in such a way so that the assets are not taken away, the house, the car, the whatever?
So this is a complicated question. The short answer is yes. There is planning that you can do to prevent those things from happening. As usual, the sooner you start thinking about those issues, the better. The longer it goes, the less options that you have. So I think what you're talking about is estate recovery. So the amount that was paid, was it through Medicaid or Medicare? It was probably Medicaid. So either way, through Medicaid, the state will try to recoup the dollar amount that they spent in caring for that individual. So there's a few ways that we deal with this. One is having an estate plan is the best way to do it, because if you already have in your estate plan where you want your assets to go and your assets have beneficiary designations on them, the state cannot recoup those assets because they have beneficiary designations. Homes are the main thing that the state of Michigan can recoup because you don't have beneficiary designations on your houses. So this is another reason why a trust is a great idea, because if you have a trust prior to your death, we prepare a quick claim deed saying that if your house is not sold or conveyed prior to your death, it goes into the trust. So effectively, it puts your home into the trust prior to you receiving those government benefits, and it shields it from estate recovery. There's a lot of tools that we have. So trusts are one of them. Irrevocable trusts are another one. That's a little bit more complex. But the short answer to that question is yes, and the sooner you start planning for it, the better.
Yeah. I have a question about a trust. Could you explain what keeping a trust in your own name is about? So that could you kind of go over that one a little bit?
Yeah, so a lot of people have a question about revocable versus irrevocable trust, and I think that's what you're probably talking about. So a revocable trust is in your name or the name of you and your spouse is a revocable trust. And what that means is you can get rid of it, change it, do whatever you want to it at any time prior to your death. Your trust only becomes irrevocable at your death, meaning that your beneficiaries, your trustees, they can't change it. But prior to that, it can be changed. So when you get a revocable trust, it doesn't change anything about the way that you use your accounts that are in the trust. It's not a taxable event, none of that. It just puts it into the trust. So what that means is you would, instead of your bank account, say you have checking and savings at the credit union, instead of it being in your name only, it becomes in your name revocable living trust. And that's how you make sure that asset is in the trust and won't go through probate. And so that's all it is. It's a name change, nothing else. And we would do that for all of your assets and make sure your trust is completely funded so that we don't have estate recovery and we don't have probate.
This is in regard to people that might need some assistance. And we got all the living places, but what about something like a home health aide where somebody is injured, does not have to be in the hospital, but can't really do well for a while, can be at home, but having a little trouble negotiating the bathroom or doing the laundry down the basement steps. Yeah.
Yeah, they're wonderful agencies all over town. I mean, we have such a great resource in this area. So there are a lot of home health agencies that will come in and they'll do anything that you need. And they, you know, it's at private pay. So
that is not covered by any Medicare kind of thing?
No, unfortunately it's not. So, but there's a lot of resources. The Housing Bureau is a great resource in Ann Arbor, and they can kind of give you some recommendations.
Okay, thank you.
Oops, you went.
Yep. I just want to add to veterans. So if someone has veteran benefits, to look into that. An active veteran that has been active on duty and also has been over to the VA and seen a physician there.
Hi, I had a question regarding rehabilitation outside of the rehab center. Most recently, one of her family members was released from rehabilitation and the doctor recommended that she continue outside rehabilitation, but there was no independent rehabilitation assistant assigned to the family member. So I was wondering if you could possibly recommend independent rehabilitation folks in the area that do accept insurance.
I can speak to that a little bit. And basically, many senior communities offer rehabs in their building. So, and it's more of a step down. So if you have the diagnosis in the hospital, you go to rehab, which is intensive, generally 5 days a week. And then Medicare then will pay for a continuing of the rehab. And for instance, in my building, we have a rehab, and usually it's 2 to 3 days a week. So you start off very intensive, Medicare will pay for that for the 5 days. But Medicare, now they've spent all this money on you, they want to make sure that you, when you are discharged, whether it's home or it's to an apartment or where it is, that you will have a continuum of care, at least when they love to, it's like to get back to your baseline. So you will be very intensive in the rehab, and then they'll give you a step down, and that's covered under Medicare, and that will continue until for weeks. I mean, weeks and weeks until they feel that you're established and can maintain at your baseline. But as far as having it, are you talking about an out? Like, and everything is done through doctor's order. So if you have a doctor's order for the follow-up, they would be able to continue their therapy even at a therapy center, too.
How do you find them? I mean, I've looked in the paper, okay, I'm in the yellow pages, but because I didn't have
transportation at the time. Now that I've got transportation, it's like I don't have the access to Medicare taking care of it or my insurance taking care of it anymore because I had to stop for a while and get a car, let's say, to go to therapy. They gave me many, many places to call for transportation, and it was very, very expensive. So I waited till I got a car, and now it seems like I'm not able to go to therapy because my time has run out. I guess that's what I'm...
One thing that's really a very, you know, strong resource for you is going to be going to your primary care physician. They can make, you know, they're experts in that. They can make a referral source for you, recommendations. They can give you a rehabilitation prescription, basically.
I have to find my own place, and the people that I've called have told me that your insurance doesn't pay for it now because it was a period of time where I wasn't able to go.
Even insurance agencies, I know, you know, with the different companies we work with, so many in our rehabilitation center, what we'll often do is recommend that a patient then call their insurance company. They have a list of providers in the area from, you know, whether it be outpatient therapy, you know, rehabilitation centers that they work with. That's a great thing for you to do. You know, reach out to your insurance provider and ask, you know, who am I network with? What are my out-of-pocket costs going to be, you know, if I'm expected or if Medicare is not going to cover this particular service for me?
I also want to say something. When you said you didn't have a ride, if anybody doesn't know about a ride, that's an amazing thing that everybody should be able to take advantage of. It's through the ATA in Ann Arbor, and it goes all wherever the bus service goes to. And what A-Ride is, you fill out an application, and they will come and pick you up and take you anywhere for $3. So if you know or you have a loved one that needs to go anywhere in Ann Arbor or Ypsilanti, make sure that you sign them up for A-Ride.
I had a question regarding the revocable trust. You said that it's revocable while you're living and you can make changes and whatnot. If you have a joint trust and one person passes away, then what? Is it still revocable or no longer revocable?
Yes, it's still revocable. The surviving spouse has the same authority as the deceased spouse had before they died. So the surviving spouse can still get rid of the trust. Usually what happens is that the surviving spouse doesn't change anything about beneficiaries, but what will normally happen in that situation is that the surviving spouse may want to add on a co-trustee. It's usually one of the children in the event that they need help paying bills, things like that, and handling trust assets. Because if you have a joint trust, then both spouses are co-trustees together. Once one spouse dies, then the surviving spouse becomes the sole trust. So yes, it can be changed. If that's something that you are not comfortable with, which does happen, we can draft it so that it becomes irrevocable on the first death, but both spouses have to agree to that and sign to that effect in writing.
Okay, but you recommend adding someone to the...
If it's necessary. It depends on the ability, the age, and if the surviving spouse needs help. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But that's the most common situation, is that upon a first death, the surviving spouse will want to add one of the children on, who was probably already listed as a successor trustee, but they may want to add them on as a co-trustee for convenience so that they can help them deal with trust matters.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, if there are no more questions, we certainly appreciate our panel being here tonight and giving us all the information. If you want to speak with them afterwards, I'm sure they'll stick around a little bit to talk with you. Thank you very much.